T-minus 78. Dortulu Tepe, southeast of Ankara, Turkey. Ever since laying eyes on the first partially excavated pillar of the dozen he expected to unearth at Dortulu Tepe in due course, Billy Kendrick had been thinking in terms of layers. Dortulu Tepe, whether it was a temple, monument, or served any one of several other theorized purposes for similar ancient sites, housed hidden treasures that had been lost to time and quite likely deliberately buried. In a few months, Billy hoped that he would be able to walk on the excavated interior of the hill-like site and gaze up at the pillars from their bases. He had been fortunate enough to do so at the best-known other sites that seemed similar in nature, but had absolutely nothing on the significance of this one. The top layer of intricately carved images on the totem-like pillar, much broader than any Billy had seen before, appeared to tell a story of a comet or asteroid impact and the flood that followed. Billy had barely slept the previous night as these carvings danced around in his mind, adding weight to existing theories by explicitly linking the impact event already suggested as Göbekli Tepe with the evidence-supported but controversial theory that a flood of truly biblical proportions had indeed ravaged the region shortly before the dawn of recorded history. As exciting as this was for Billy, he knew it could be dismissed by doubters as mythical art rather than a literal representation of ancestral memory. And as remarkable as the top layer of carvings was, it had nothing on what came below. The second layer, revealed during a day of intensive work by Mesut's speechless team, almost knocked Billy off his feet. Mesut actually stepped in to assist him as one of his legs appeared to buckle under the shock of the revelatory carvings, and Billy laughed like he'd never laughed before as he felt his friend's hands supporting his weight. "In all of my dreams," Billy said, shaking his head in amazement. "Mesut, in all of my dreams, I never even imagined that something like this could exist, let alone that we would find it." Mesut smiled. It really had been a team effort, starting when Timo's funds enabled Billy to acquire and utilize the state-of-the-art scanning equipment that detected potential indications of monolithic pillars lost to time. This site had been Billy's highest hope of all, which was why he based himself as close as possible while remaining within easy reach of an airport that could have quickly carried him to one of the others. Mesut felt honored at the time to be selected as team leader and was pleasantly surprised by how hands-off Billy had been, always willing to offer advice from his immense bank of experience in the field, but equally willing to let Mesut and his local expertise on this kind of site make the day-to-day decisions.
"It's not them, though, is it?" Mesut said.
Having crouched to carefully view every inch of the carvings on each of the pillar's four sides, Billy gazed intently at the one Mesut was pointing at. The other three would have been more than enough to capture the world's attention and turn all common conceptions of human history on their head, and each provided an important context for the fourth. Evidently, the context was so clear that Billy felt confident assuming that this was the fourth, rather than merely one of four. He made this assumption without even realizing in the moment that the most incredible carving of all was indeed on the pillar's west-facing side. Sunset, representing the end, as any student of Archaeology 101 might predict. But his mind was settled nonetheless. The east-facing side, which context suggested as the first, indisputably featured a carving of a wingless flying vehicle. Billy knew it was an alien craft, but beyond any doubt, indisputably, it was at the very least a flying craft of some sort. This was no tiny shape that could look like a UFO if he squinted hard enough, and the three figures pointing up at it from below were just as indisputably human. A few years earlier, seeing this carving might well have stopped Billy Kendrick's heart in its tracks. He took it as absolute proof that aliens had visited Earth. A truth that was more than a little redundant now that Earth had placed ambassadors on an alien world and an extraterrestrial had been walking around at the UN barely 24 hours earlier, but even now it made him feel more alive than he had in a long time. For one thing, the carving showed that humans had seen the visiting aliens, which seemed to run in contrast with the messenger's negative answer to Dan McCarthy's question as to whether they had ever flown uncloaked in Earth's skies prior to his own first meeting with them. The second and third carvings on the pillar's north and south faces were identical to each other and relayed the alien craft much closer to the ground. The ring-like craft appeared to be hovering close to the ground rather than touching the ground, but depth perception was difficult even in these most remarkably detailed carvings. In each of the identical images, the craft now appeared colossal in contrast to the humans who appeared shrunken by the change in scale. They were still evidently human, however, and most spectacularly of all, these carvings displayed a new figure standing between the craft and the three humans. With elongated heads, somehow grotesque to Billy's eyes without appearing threatening, the solitary alien was approximately twice the height of the humans.
"It's definitely not them," Billy said, belatedly replying to Masut's question.
This answer seemed so self-evident to him that it almost went without saying. After all, the messenger's heads were nothing like that shape, and they were nowhere near that tall. The fourth and final carving was the one that made Masut's question more understandable, though, and without seeing the extent of the skull elongation and height difference for himself, Billy would have had a hard time believing it wasn't the messenger's after all. The close-up scene before Billy's eyes, expertly carved on a pillar unseen for thousands of years, was so familiar as to be positively uncanny. In it, the small left hand of this imposingly tall alien, as far from a messenger as the humans it stood beside, was connected to the back of the neck of one of its human contactees.
"It's talking to them," Billy said incredulously.
"Masut, if the craft was the right shape and that alien was a messenger, this scene could be from the damn drive-in.
And this is dated at 12,000 years old?
Give or take," Masut replied.
The men remained by the pillar for several minutes, silently analyzing the remarkable sights before them. Eventually, Billy stepped back and looked around at the rest of Dortlu Tepe, trying to imagine what kind of truths would be revealed when the whole site was excavated. He was beyond giddy. He was emotionally overwhelmed.
"Come on, my friend," Masut said with a smile a few seconds after his phone buzzed in his pocket.
He didn't check it, but seemed sure what the message was about.
"The rest of the team have families to get home to, and we cannot work safely in this light. I asked them to wait at the cabin until you had seen the carvings, but I am sure they would be delighted if you say hello. And I assume you will be back tomorrow morning."
"Wild horses couldn't keep me away," Billy said. "I'll change hotel too, somewhere closer. I wouldn't mind getting my hands dirty on the excavation either, unless you feel like I would—"
"You could never get in our way, Billy,"
Masut cut him off, smiling warmly. The men walked towards the on-site base the team referred to as the cabin with a spring in their step. When the figures outside it came into view, however, Masut's pace markedly slowed. He stopped altogether for a second or two, more than enough to catch Billy's attention, and then proceeded with evident hesitation.
"What's up?" Billy replied.
"Be calm," Masut replied. "But there are two more men than there should be."